Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to the next episode of the True Turf Super Series. Well, I think we may be able to call this one the Super Equipment Manager Series because it's our first opportunity to bring someone who's got their hands dirty and getting in and making sure that everything's maintained well on the golf course. And I'd like to welcome Jason Fontana, who's the Senior Equipment Manager at Desert Mountain in Arizona. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Nick. Nice to be here.
Yeah, good on you. I appreciate you making the time. Jason, as I said at the start there, taking down an equipment manager path here today and very important role across all golf facilities that keeps the place running, I suppose, at the end of the day. Tell us a little bit about Desert Mountain where you are, because it sounds like it's an amazing facility.
It really is. It's huge. Total acreage on the property is about 9,000 acres, and inside that 9,000 acres, we have six Jack Nicklaus signature golf courses and then a seventh par 54 par 3 course. That one's called Seven. That's our latest addition. But yeah, it's spread over along a large property and scattered around. And each course has a little bit something different feel from the other, a little bit of links on some, a little bit of high desert. You know, you get a little taste of everything.
Yeah. Wow.
Half of them are warm season, so we oversee Bermuda on a couple of them. And the others are full-time cool season ryegrass.
So season grass in Arizona, and I know the weather's starting to get hot over there, or about to get hot, so that must create a challenge from a management perspective.
It does. The superintendents love it. You know, it gives them a little challenge during the heat of the summer, which we're approaching. But they do a fantastic job of keeping it up, and you don't even really notice that anything's struggling.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, there's seven courses across that amount of space. It sounds like it must be a bit of a journey between the outer reaches of each course.
Oh, it can be. I mean, you can be at one place, and if you've got to go, you know, to the north end of the property, you know, that can be a 25, 30-minute drive, you know, just to get from one to the other, you know, and that's in a pickup truck. You know, you get people around that drive around on utility carts or golf carts, and it takes even longer.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. You know,
it's a lot of navigating.
Tell us a little bit about your journey to Desert Mountain. What got you started in the equipment side of the business?
So I came into the equipment side just kind of naturally. You know, I climbed the ladder. I started almost 30 years ago in bunkers, you know, like a lot of folks, just hand raking bunkers and learning that, and then work away into operating equipment. And I kind of had a background in auto mechanics before I got into golf, so I already liked getting dirty and fixing things. And at the first course I was at, operators were also required to participate in setting up adjusting mowers for the next day. So you kind of got a little bit of hands on that, and that was, you know, just kind of fell right in with working on stuff. So once I got into that, it was a natural fit, and start getting into some of the precision things that you do with setting up mowers. And it's fun, it's challenging, but it's also very rewarding when you see the product out on the golf course.
Yeah, no doubt. I suppose technology with machines has evolved over the time that you've been not only in the role but in the industry. And so, you know, how does that create the challenge for you and your team as you're operating with new equipment, new tech coming in?
Technology has come a long way. I mean, I remember the days when things were levers and belt driven, and, you know, everything nowadays is pretty much somehow or some way controlled by a computer or a sensor, or, you know, it's plugged into somehow, some way. With new guys, I think it kind of is a little bit easier for them because they're not so trained in the old way. You know, they can come right in and learn the technology right out the gate instead of trying to adapt, you know, which there's challenges for everybody with it, but the manufacturers are real helpful with support and helping us learn everything. So the technology is great. I mean, it really makes it more efficient, better productivity, things like that.
Nothing like hitting something with a hammer, though, to get it back in.
Every once in a while, you need to break out the hammer.
Exactly right.
But yeah, anything, it seems like anything these days, you just pull out a laptop or some sort of a meter and, you know, plug it in. You got to plug it in.
Yes, we're obviously seeing a lot of machinery starting to head down that electric or lithium path as well. The tech is improving and getting to those stages where Manufacturer's device or a laptop or an iPad or something that's going to start giving you all the data that you need off the machines and pinpointing a way to get them fixed.
It goes deep. Some of those programs go really deep.
Yeah, exactly right. So before Desert Mountain, where were you? Were you in golf before Desert Mountain?
Oh, yeah. So I'm an Arizona native, born and raised here. I grew up in northern Arizona, kind of up in the mountains.
Yep.
So we were cool season there, but a lot of my time has been down here in the desert. And I've, you know, just chased the career a bit. And I'd actually worked here at Desert Mountain in 2015 as an assistant superintendent. So I'm not, it's not foreign to me. It's still a lot to, I mean, I don't think anybody ever gets a full grip on every little detail here, but it was familiar to me. And when I saw the position open up, it was just, you know, I had to try and go for it. And I'm super excited to be here. I love it here.
Yeah. How do you find, or do you see it as an advantage from your position now that you were an assistant superintendent or you had that background on the course before you took over the equipment manager's role?
Oh, yeah. There's absolutely crossover. I mean, you kind of see things through a different lens when you have a little bit of that experience out there and how equipment maintenance affects what you see and health and aesthetics and all that. So I think going both ways, it helps, you know, for going out on the golf course and as an assistant or even a superintendent, you know, you kind of know what you're looking for. If you see machinery issues and then vice versa in the shop, you know, you might think you have a machine issue and it might actually be a turf issue. And so that crossover kind of helps really zero down on issues you might find inside the shop or out on the golf course.
Yeah. So how many on your team there at Desert Mountain?
Currently right now I have 12 technicians. We're looking to fill two more. You know, we try to have two per 18.
We just had
a gentleman retire. So we're in the midst of filling those roles, but generally I try to keep two per course. So 14 total.
Yeah. And how have you found the recruitment process? I know some areas of the industry are a little bit tight these days in recruiting. Is it a bit of a challenge still where you are?
It's easier right now. I mean, we went through this procedure a year ago. Mm-hmm. It was much more challenging a year ago. I mean, I think I had a position open for months and got very little interest. And this time around, I've got some interest and guys that want to learn the trade. And I love that. You know, I love to share the industry. And if they want to learn something new, how do you say no to that? You know?
Yeah, exactly right.
Oh, but it's much, much better this time around than it was a year ago when we were looking to fill the spot.
Oh, that's good to hear. Hopefully it's changing around the place.
I hope it's a good trend. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. It's been a big challenge. So with 12 staff now moving to 14, and you said two technicians on each course, how many shops do you have across the facility, across 9,000 acres?
So there's seven golf courses total, but a couple of them run out of, we have some shops that run multiple courses. So we have five shops total. Two shops run two courses out of each one. So Renegade and Seven run out of one shop, and then Coach East Geronimo run out of another shop. And then everybody else pretty much has a dedicated shop.
Yeah. Okay. So it's, and the, you know, ability then, I suppose, as the equipment manager, the senior equipment manager there, you've got to have your finger on the pulse of each shop. How do you find the challenges of keeping up with such a big territory to cover?
That is very challenging. I mean, I have a lot of faith in my staff and they do, you know, they're very independent, you know, but I still, it's hard to visit all at once. I try to make a shop visit each day to see how everybody's doing progress and maybe even put some eyes on some grass and see how things are cutting and performing. But, you know, some days that's not possible. But a lot of reaching out to guys and just seeing how things are going. But for the most part, I'm able to make at least one stop to each facility at least once a day.
So have you put in any processes in then for you to be able to track and manage, I suppose, the multiple pieces of machinery you got and what's been worked on at any time?
We're using OnLink. We have a lot of tracking software. And we're actually in the John Deere Ops Center. Mm-hmm. We're able to see most of our, especially all of our new stuff is all telematically enabled. So we can see it from, you know, either the computer in the office or the app on the phone. I can see where things are, how they're performing. I can see all their maintenance history. I mean, everything's kind of, you know, that technology thing we were talking about, everything's at the hang in your phone, really, which is a huge help because it's really hard to put eyes on every piece of equipment that's out running. But the apps really help see how they're doing, where they're at, efficiency, you know, maintenance history, the whole thing. So it's huge.
Yep. How many pieces of equipment do you have across the whole facility?
That's the million-dollar question. I'm still, I've touched most of it, but I know I still haven't touched everything, but well over 1,000.
Yeah, wow. It's a massive operation, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. As you say, you're still finding pieces of machinery around the place. That's
100% truth. I mean, we have it on paper. You know, we've got files that show what we have and where it is, but, you know, it could be out used or someone else is using it. And, you know, I've been here almost 2 years. And like I said, I've got my hands on most things, but there's still some lingering equipment out there that, I didn't know we had this.
That's right. One of the bigger challenge, I suppose, for the industry as well is safety and the OHSA program and everything over there in the States. We call it OH&S in here. In Australia, it's got a whole range of different names, workplace health and safety. That many pieces of machinery, that many operators, you've got your technicians as well. How do you handle, you know, that safety element of not only machinery, but when they're in the shop and making sure everything's working as it should?
So I'm actually been appointed the safety coordinator for agronomy. So that's another one of my roles.
Yeah.
And on the equipment side of it, you're absolutely right. I mean, with so many pieces of equipment and, you know, each agronomy staff in each course probably has 25 to 30 guys. So, you know, you're talking over 200 operators. So, I mean, it leaves it open to, you know, the more guys you have operating equipment, the more chance you have of a possible incident, which, knock on wood, we've been really fortunate. We haven't had any problems, but we have multiple layers of safety. We do monthly safety meetings for each piece of equipment. We have paper binders. We do, and we try to follow like an OSHA guideline, you know, our Occupational Health and Safety Administration, try to follow their guidelines for shop, upkeep and all that. But with the equipment, with the monthly safety meetings and the paperback copies of safety forms, and we even have videos, you know, bilingual. So, you know, we have a lot of different languages here too. So it helps to present things in multiple languages. But between paper copies, videos, monthly safety meetings, I mean, we're pretty redundant in keeping up on equipment safety and then shop safety as well.
Yeah, no, it's a very important part of the industry because as you indicated there before, You're not far away from one mistake, and you're certainly watching on social media these days. And our friends at Turf Today, who post a lot of images of machines lying on their side or other things,
That's my worst nightmare. I mean, we can replace machinery all day long, but when people get hurt and it starts affecting people, that's a no go. I mean, that's number one priority here is to keep everybody safe.
So you do a lot of it. You said there's over 200 operators out there. Do you do much education then with the operators? Because, you know, I was in the UK recently and at a shop there, and you know, there was a big sign up that said, you know, leave the machine how you'd like to find it the next day. Do you do a bit of education with the guys to make sure that when the machine comes back, it's washed down thoroughly, all the checks are done? And I suppose it's also the pre-checks before it goes out as well.
Absolutely. Yes. There's morning pre-checks, you know, before they go out, tires, fuel, all that. But that's just being double checking what they were supposed to do the day before when they closed out was, you know, everything gets blown off and goes through a wash process and refuel so that there's no waiting in the morning. You know, guys can go right out the gate when they get here and not have to spend time messing with tires and things like that. Just try to, you know, keep them efficient and not lingering, if you will.
Yeah.
But that's part of the monthly training too. You know, we do not just safety, but operational training, and that's all part of the standard operating procedure with operating the machine is the cleanup and the refuel process too.
And you know, I suppose it's always the challenge is trying to get the operators, you know, you got to work on the lowest base, I suppose, because you'll have your stars out there who return everything the way it goes. But I'm assuming you have a sign in, sign out for the machines as well, do you, when they're going in and out?
A lot of that comes from the OnEquip that we use, the tracking software for equipment. They also, the superintendents build their job boards off of that. So they create a job board and it links all the equipment that the techs have available. You know, if something's down, it'll be red tagged. And when, for example, if a superintendent goes to build a job board and they try to grab a piece of equipment that's unavailable, it'll let them know. So it really helps with what's going out and what's coming in. I mean, we don't necessarily do anything on paper, but they used to do that around here.
Yeah.
Do like a tag in, tag out kind of thing, you know, walk through, looks good, sign it off, and you're good to go. But it's, a lot of it's done digitally now.
Yeah. Once again, tech coming to the fore.
it's full steam.
Yeah. Now, one of the, from our point of view, very pleasing from a TrueTurf perspective, I think you've got 9 RB48s and one of our BH40 machines there. How do they operate for you? And tell us a bit about the what you need to do to keep them going.
So the RB48s are our gold standard. I mean, we have 9 of them. We would like to have 2 at each course for the times when we have the big tournaments and they need to split the course into 9s and send one out each 9. We're almost there. But like I said, those are our go-tos. I don't see there being an alternative to that. They perform great. They really iron it out. They're efficient. They're fast. You know, guys can get through pretty quick with those things. So yeah, we're looking to just add a couple more to have a full fleet of those. The BH40, we don't use quite as frequently. It comes more in handy for like, you know, if we're sawing greens or something, we got the extra weight and the extra width, maybe dew removal, things like that. And then as maintenance is, these machines are pretty simple to work on. I mean, they're not complicated. There's not a bunch of stuff you have to take off to work on. I mean, it's all right there and straightforward and pretty easy to work on and keep maintained.
Yeah, certainly are. They're a compact machine and certainly as long as you're keeping the chains and those moving wearing parts, I suppose, up to date, then they don't give you much of a problem at all, which is really good. So do you sort of have like a 6 and 12 month sort of process of, you know, maybe chains and those things, sprockets, bearings?
Yeah, more like quarterly, we'll give a deep dive through them. And as long as the operators, you know, are taking care of them, then it's really just PM, you know. But we do, every time they come in after being used, we go through a daily maintenance and then quarterly we do a deep dive through it and, you know, make sure everything's tight and make sure the chain still going good, sprockets are good, and everything's moving freely.
How often do the guy I get other guys rolling out there? Is a couple of times a week, 3 times?
I'd say on average 3 times a week. And then when there's tournaments, it's a couple of days before and then all during the tournament, and then, you know, after the tournament they'll let it breathe a little bit. But they get used pretty good.
And how often you're running, you just mentioned tournaments there, how often you're running events there? Is that more member events or is it outside tournaments as well?
It's mostly internal. I mean, they had, they're right in the middle of a US amateur at Cochise right now. So that's men, women event going on right now. So there's some outside going there, but a lot of what goes on here is internal. I mean, we just finished the member guest at the end of April. That was their biggest deal of the year. But yeah, there's lots of tournaments, little ones, big ones, lot going on.
So for those big ones, obviously the US amateur sort of style events, so they, you're pooling machinery at one of the shops, or have you got enough that at each shop that you don't need to do those sort of things?
No, we're good. We don't, I mean, now that we've got 9 rollers, we're good. But before we had 9, there was a handful and we'd bring a couple over from other courses just in case those guys that had a tournament needed to have 2 so they can do 9 at a time, which was no problem. But now it's the way Director of Agronomy is building the leases now is everybody has what they need. Nobody has to shuffle anything, borrow anything. It's real streamlined.
Yeah. How should be. Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. From a day-to-day operation, you just mentioned Director of Agronomy. Is there then a course superintendent at each course as well?
Yeah, so staff setup, we're under a Director of Agronomy, Todd Bone, and then each course has a superintendent and then 3 assistant supers. So there's a senior and then 2 assistants. So yeah. Four managers, ideally per course out in agronomy.
Yeah.
You know, and then a crew of 25 to maybe up to 30.
Mm. So your role there, obviously overseeing everything, how do you manage up, I suppose, to make sure the course superintendents at each facility, as well as the director of agronomy, know what's going on and now understand what's happening with the machinery?
Yeah, lots of communication. I mean, it starts with that. We communicate really well. We have things in place to, you know, if somebody's using equipment, they can see that something, you know, everybody can see what everyone else is doing at any given time. And, you know, if we're using seasonal implements or things like that, they can see that too, like aerifiers, for example. You know, they might want to go this week, but see someone else already has them. So it kind of helps schedule out that way. But communicating with the technician and the equipment manager side with superintendents is huge, and that's what really keeps us going well.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. Efficient. Yeah, very much so. And one thing we've seen from this side of the industry, certainly with the agronomy side, those course superintendents, is this great network of sharing of information. I'm assuming that's the same across the equipment managers in the industry as well.
Oh, yeah. You mean as far as equipment managers sharing tricks?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, just, yeah. You know, using that as a communication network and education network.
Yeah. And I'm kind of new into that. You know, I know superintendents have been doing that for quite a while with networking. And I know equipment managers are starting to get into that more. I personally don't do any social media, so I feel like I miss out on a lot, which is unfortunate. Yeah. I'm trying to warm up to that. Because I know there's a lot of stuff out there that technicians share, and, you know, things you learn along the way. And the more we share with each other just makes us all sharper and better. Mm-hmm. So I need to get on board with that, to be totally honest with you.
But the journey for you, I suppose, as you say, coming initially, do you still like to tinker yourself away from the golf course? You know, I think you're rebuilding cars a lot in the earlier days. That still give you some time away? Do you still like to get back in and tinker around? Yes.
And you have to, because the rust grows if you don't. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, the instinct is there. I mean, you know, things get a little more difficult the older you get, but it's like, I still get out there and make sure I remember how to do certain things and don't forget it. But absolutely.
Anything you're working on at the moment away from the day-to-day?
So right now, my son's car, my youngest son, he's 17. He's got his first car. Okay. It was handed down to him from his older brother, but it's given him some fits. So, I'm fixing that up, but also bringing him in and showing him the basics of, you know, some of these things you kind of have to know just as a life skill, you know, like changing a tire and changing oil. But letting him get in there and get dirty and do some things that he's not familiar with. And hopefully that'll carry over in his life where, you know, you work on your own stuff and not pay someone else to do it.
Yeah, exactly right. A very useful skill to have. So does that mean the older brother maybe didn't hand it back in the best condition to the younger brother?
Yeah, it'll be better than it was that he left it.
And living out, you know, down in the desert there now, and I think you say normally it's about 110 degrees at this time of the year, but only 90 degrees.
The weather's been bizarre. I mean, it goes all the way back to last fall. They were forecasting a dry, warmer than normal winter, and it was the complete opposite. I mean, we had record snowfall in northern Arizona. We had record rainfall down here in the desert. Mm. All the reservoirs are full, with the exception of the ones you hear about in the news, like Lake Mead and Lake Powell. You know, those are a different, bigger element there. But desert's green, forests are green. You know, it should be mid-June. We should be averaging 105. Mm. You know, usually in June, you're in the hundreds, and you've got wildfires burning in the woods, and knock on wood, we don't have much of that right now. And the desert's still hanging on. The forest's still hanging on. It's low to mid-90s down here right now.
Yeah. So quite pleasant.
Yeah, we love it. Especially the cool season guys, you know, the rye isn't really burning up too hard. I mean, it struggled a little bit, but it should be a lot worse, but it's not. So we're grateful for that, as long as we'll hold it as long as we can.
Exactly right. So what do you do for a bit of downtime away from the golf course operations?
Anything outdoors. I mean, it's camping, fishing, hunting, just whatever I can do to get out of the house and be outside. Right now, it being a little warmer in the desert, we try to go up north into the woods, you know, go out in the forest and just do some hiking and see things and stuff like that. Maybe do a little bit of traveling close by. But in the wintertime down here in the desert, when it's a little cooler, we like to go off-road and, you know, take the dog out in the desert, go off-road and maybe do a little gold prospecting, things like that.
Right, so haven't yet quite got to retirement for your gold prospecting. You
trying to find, trying to find it. Haven't found it yet, but
well, one day the team will know there when the doors shut to the office.
The lights will be off in the office.
Where's Jason? Oh, he's retired. He's found the big nugget.
He's out in the desert.
It's the wonderful thing, I suppose, about where you live, and people think Arizona hot, dry, but, you know, as you say, from north to south, there's a whole range of different conditions over there that you can go off and
it's a very diverse state. I mean, there's some of everything except tropical rainforest.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get up into northern Arizona, up on the peaks, and you're 13,000 feet. It's tundra. You know, you go to eastern Arizona, it's lush rainforest. You come down here in the desert. I mean, even the desert can be lush.
Mm.
If it's a good wet winter, the desert's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a really diverse climate in this state.
Yeah. So what would you, if someone was wanting to get into the equipment side of the golf industry, what would you say to them?
I'd say take it. Go for it. It's a fun trade. It's a specialized trade. You know, I mean, even though you're working with tools and things like you would in an automotive, you're taking the basics of that and coming into a very precise, you know, everything's real precision when you're doing things by the thousandth of an inch, and the reward for the hard work when you see it out on the golf course, you know, superintendents produce a nice canvas for us to paint with, you know, give us the green grass and we'll try to give you the good mowers and together we'll make something look really nice. It's very rewarding. So I would encourage anyone that even has the slightest interest, give it a try. You'd be surprised at what you see and do, and might open your eyes into even more options in the golf maintenance world.
Yeah, it's such a critical role for the industry, because at the end of the day, if the machines aren't set up correctly, you know, the cutting units aren't as sharp as they can possibly be, then, you know, the work that the guys do out in the course is really for nothing at the end of the day if you're challenging the grass. So it's you know, from that point of view, you know, with your, you know, the reels and all those cutting implements, you know, I suppose it's a real process for you to make sure that they're at their peak every time they go out.
Yeah, we have some pretty tight standards. It took us a little bit to develop what works across the whole property, but we needed to set some sort of standard for everyone to follow. And we kind of take, you know, specs from the manufacturer manuals and take it even farther than that. Mm. So we really try to eliminate any possibility of something getting too far away and not producing, you know, giving us a mediocre result. We don't want mediocre.
Mm. Yeah.
So,
and it's, I suppose, once again, it's a, you know, you got other people from outside coming in, but I'm sure there's plenty of members that are expecting a really great experience each time they go out on the golf course. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, yeah, very high expectations. And even from our end, you know, we have the pride that we want to deliver those expectations.
Absolutely.
You know, that's kind of why we're here too at this place.
Such an important quality in a team, isn't it? That pride in and it's, you know, it's almost like an ownership themselves when they're out there, that, you know, this is my space, this is my machine. You know, I want to
get it really is. It almost creates a little bit of competition. And you know, with the competition comes the desire to be better than the other guy, and nothing bad comes out of that.
No. Do you find that actually? Do you see a little bit of competition between the teams on the courses and also in the shops?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, I know with the techs, they do. They kind of encourage each other, you know, push each other. Mm. And I know on the golf courses, they do the same thing, you know, especially amongst the superintendents. They definitely challenge each other and try to outdo each other. And again, the end result of all that is just greatness.
Yeah. Do you get out and play a bit yourself? Are you a golfer or?
I wouldn't say that. I mean, it's been a while since I've taken sticks out, but I never really got the knack of it. I just have fun out there. You know, I never
That's
really
the thing, isn't it?
Too serious. It was I can never figure it out. So I just have fun with it.
Yeah, it's, as long as you have fun out there, that's the main thing. As long as the ball goes forward every now and again, that's a test of
it. You get the one good shot in the whole round, and it makes the whole thing great.
Yeah. As they generally say, that's your last shot into the 18th green. It brings you back next time.
That's right.
So what's the challenges facing you over the next few weeks and months? Have you got anything that's on the book that's really a must-do approach over the next few periods?
Well, the Bermuda guys are still transitioning. You know, the Bermuda grass guys, they've sprayed out their cool season, so they're kind of in the middle of transition. So there's a lot of cultural practices going on. They're out verticutting, airfying, and you know, messing with heights and trying to get that Bermuda to come up and fill in. So we're going through that, a lot of the cultural stuff. That's probably our biggest challenge right now. Mm-hmm. Get ready for the heat. And then once the heat comes in, you know, we'll dial everything down and just focus on, you know, keeping things cool and growing. And then once that we get over that peak, then we'll start focusing on, you know, winter season. I mean, it's already almost here. Once we get to October, we'll be overseeding and members will be coming back. I mean, we hold on to some year round, but the majority of them leave for the summer and come back.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So, you know, it's mid June. That'll be here before you know it. So it's crazy how fast things come. Yeah. You know, get through this summer heat and then it'll be go right to getting ready for overseed.
Well, you must have a long list of projects, I suppose. How do you make sure you can keep on top of them all?
I have to write them down. You know, I got a whiteboard like everybody else with a big list, and you just check them off, try to prioritize them, and just go down one at a time. And you know, and downtime right now, as far as techs, we're able to put some attention in the shops and the yards and try to, you know, update them a little bit, clean them up, paint floors, things like that.
Mm. Yeah. Well, look, nice clean environment in the shop leads to, as you say, that pride and that the quality going in, but also coming out of the place as well.
Right, and safety as well.
Yeah, correct. Yeah,
that's how we stay safe, is keep everything clean and organized. And
yeah, well, Jason, it's Friday afternoon over there when we're recording this, must be almost knockoff time. So we really appreciate you coming on today. Some great insights, not only into Desert Mountain, but also what you do in your role and the integral part that you play in making sure that everything works as it should. Thank you again, and look forward to talking soon. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Nick. Take care.